Before we go to that, the chair from the Mid-Atlantic Council has asked for a moment just to make a statement or say hello. Rick Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I hope you'll excuse my voice. I've been a bit under the weather and don't have much of a speaking voice today. But on behalf of the Mid-Atlantic Council, I would like to thank you today for your hospitality and to say that our new Vice Chairman, Dr. Lee Anderson, and I very much look forward to working closely with you and the New England Council as we deal with our joint FMPs and other areas of interest that we hold in common. Certainly, each council has its own unique set of challenges before it right now, but we also hold many challenges in common as we try to come to terms with the new requirements of the Reauthorization Act, and I look forward to working very closely with you all as we do that. By way of update, I have established, as you're aware, an ACLAM committee that will be developing an omnibus action and approach to that issue so that we can bring our council into compliance and our FMPs into compliance with that requirement of the Act. That's an item that I would expect to be in close communication with you and your council on. But again, thank you today for your hospitality, and look forward to the afternoon's agenda. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Rip. I look forward to attending your meeting next month down in Montauk, where we can continue talking about collaborating. So thank you. Okay, Phil.
Thank you. Well, it's coming up. The slide presentation I'm going to give is document number 6 behind tab 1. It's going to be a very abbreviated version of the discussion paper. I'm trying to keep it short, and actually I've gotten instructions to make it even shorter than that. So I'm going to proceed forthwith. The purpose of this paper is in the council's September meeting, they directed the staff to prepare a white paper to address issues and proposals that were in a letter submitted by the Associated Fisheries of Maine with respect to yellowtail flounder, incidental catch, and the impact on the scallop fishery. So this paper is going to basically state the problems caused by yellowtail flounder incidental catch limits and its impact on the scallop fishery, outline some ideas for objectives to make a conceptual framework for managing, evaluating alternatives, and to discuss alternatives to achieve those objectives. The primary need for taking action is that scallop vessels fishing in the closed area access programs have a 10% allocation of yellowtail flounder for each of the Georges Bank and Southern New England Mid-Atlantic stocks. In 2006 and again in 2008, those scallop vessels reached their tack of yellowtail flounder before all of the vessels that could have participated in the scallop fishery in those areas were able to do so, and there were trips lost, scallop yield was foregone on account of the limit on yellowtail flounder. And that scallop yield, even though the vessels that did not get into the closed area access era program were given compensation trips in the open areas, the catch rates did not equate. So there was still some lost scallop yield as a result. In the closed area access programs, scallop vessels can land 1,000 pounds yellowtail flounder per trip. And general category, that's the limited access vessels. General category vessels cannot land any. All catch, both the landings under the 1,000-pound limit and the discards from both the general category and the limited access fleets, count against that 10% yellowtail flounder tack. And the calculation is made based on the observed trips is then extrapolated to all of the trips in the area. So there's a certain element of projection in terms of reaching that yellowtail flounder tack in order for it to be closed in a timely way. As a result of GARM 3, there are some other species, particularly or most notably, Southern New England Mid-Atlantic winter flounder that are caught incidentally in the scallop fishery, which may pose a similar problem coming up as this yellowtail flounder has already shown. So I guess I should be moving along here with my slides. The staff that collaborated on this, we came up with a simplified problem statement that these alternatives will be trying to address, and that is to reduce or eliminate the impediment to achieving optimum yield from the scallop fishery that's caused by the fishery's incidental catch of yellowtail flounder and perhaps other species. In discussing this at the staff level, we began to notice parallels with some other issues and thought we would bring them to your attention, even though it's beyond the scope of the yellowtail flounder incidental catch in the access areas. And these were not raised in the letter by the Associated Fisheries of Maine. One of them is that Amendment 16 in the Groundfish Plan proposes to have sub-allocations of yellowtail flounder, ACL, to the scallop fishery for each of the three sub-areas, stock areas. If these are adopted, and they haven't yet been adopted, these limitations could pose the same kind of impediment to the entire fishery in open and closed areas that the current yellowtail flounder tack presents to the scallop vessels fishing in the access area programs. And a lot of it will ultimately depend on the nature of the accountability measures associated with those ACLs. The staff came up with some suggested management objectives. I'm not going to read them, but these are basically, if the council proceeds with developing these alternatives to address the problem, to sort of give a conceptual framework to the discussion, and they can be reworded, modified, adopted, or not adopted by the council, but it gave us a framework. The Associated Fisheries of Maine letter, which is attached to this document number 4 as attachment 2, provided 3 proposals. I'm not going to read them in great detail, but one of them is based on the idea that scallop permit holders could absorb groundfish permits that have some allocations associated with them and then use those allocations to cover their incidental catch of yellowtail flounder in the access areas. The second proposal would enable scallop vessels to lease groundfish days for the purpose of using that vessel's yellowtail flounder allocation to be able to access the scallops and exceed that 10% tack. The third would be to allow scallop limited access vessels to join a groundfish sector that has a yellowtail flounder catch entitlement and thereby be able to use some of that in its closed area access fishery. In reviewing the proposals, as they say in the letter, are conceptual and require additional development. So we had some general comments about all three. One is that they're based on a premise that's not correct, that groundfish vessels are allocated individually some annual catch entitlement that could then be somehow transferred to a scallop vessel. In fact, Amendment 16, the annual catch entitlement applies to the sectors, and vessels have a potential sector contribution that is translated into pounds of fish only when that vessel joins a sector. So those, you don't know what those pounds are until the vessel joins a sector. Additionally, under any of these proposals that somehow enable scallop vessels to increase their ability to catch yellowtail flounder, the council will have to decide what the effect is on the 10% yellowtail flounder tack that includes both landings and discards that already exist in the plan for the access programs. In other words, just to use an example, if half of the scallop vessels join groundfish sectors to increase their yellowtail flounder catch allocation, would the remaining half of the scallop vessels still have that same 10% yellowtail flounder tack for the access areas, or would that have to be modified somehow? A second element that would apply to all of these is that scallop vessels are provided a mechanism for increasing their ability to catch yellowtail flounder, unless there's a change to the 1,000-pound landing limit, the increases will simply result in increased discards, bycatch, and the council will need to just somehow justify that or provide a mechanism that will minimize, to the extent practicable, the discard, such as requiring them to land all of their yellowtail flounder. But there are problems. So what we're doing here is we're just trying to highlight some of the issues. Those are the general ones. Now, on the specific ones, with proposal number one, which is the one that would allow scallop vessels to absorb groundfish permits, it's not clear what absorb really means, but if it's purchase, the council will have to decide what's going to happen to the other permits that are associated with that groundfish permit on a vessel right now. If it sells, or if a scallop vessel absorbs the groundfish permit for the purpose of getting yellowtail, what happens to the monkfish permit or the other permits that that vessel has? Because right now there is no permit splitting. Secondly, the permit itself does not have an allocation of yellowtail flounder or other species, and therefore purchasing the permit doesn't in it of itself come with an allocation of yellowtail flounder or other species. And if it did, we think, and we're not lawyers, that this could raise the issue of this being an individual fishery transferable quota, which would then trigger the LAP requirements, such as monitoring costs and referendum. The second AFM proposal was to use days at sea leasing. Some questions that have to be answered here is if a vessel leases a groundfish days, if a scallop vessel leases groundfish days, can it also land other groundfish species on the combination day? And what about the gear requirements there? If a groundfish vessel that leases its days out has other permits, will it then increase its effort in those other fisheries to make up for the days of groundfish days that it has leased out? It will require the council to establish a mechanism that will enable scallop vessels to use groundfish days at sea. Right now that doesn't exist, so it's just something to keep in mind. It will create a new kind of day at sea that will have to be tracked by NIMFS in terms of being a combination scallop groundfish day. And then the question exists, if a groundfish vessel leases part of its days at sea to a scallop vessel and it retains part of its days at sea, how does that affect, for example, the potential sector contribution of that groundfish vessel? Is it, let's say it leases half its days, does its potential sector contribution for all species get proportionally reduced or somehow modified? These are things that the council will have to address under that concept. The third AFM proposal is to allow a scallop vessel to join a sector, a groundfish sector, for the purpose of getting some yellowtail flounder catch entitlement. Right now, council's sector policy limits membership in a sector to vessels that have limited access permits in that fishery. That would have to be addressed. Amendment 16, proposal that would allow scallop vessels to hold a groundfish permit might enable that, but the proposal needs modification so that the catch of that scallop vessel counts against the sector and not against the scallop fishery ACL of yellowtail, because now, you know, it just has to be defined. How is that catch going to be accounted for? Is that scallop sub-allocation of yellowtail ACL, or is it scallop catch that's attributed to the groundfish sector yellowtail catch entitlement. After thinking about those three, we said, well, let's float some other ideas that might be considerable to address the problems that we identified earlier. There's seven different approaches that we came up with: gear solutions, increasing the yellowtail flounder tack for the access areas, allow the scallop vessels to form sectors solely for the purpose of pooling their yellowtail flounder catch, make some of the voluntary measures that were adopted by the industry into mandatory measures, to allocate the access area trips differently, so that maybe you spread out the incidental catch over the course of the year, increase observer coverage to get a better estimate of what the yellowtail flounder incidental catch is, and then of course there's the do nothing, no action alternative. I'm not going to go into all the details of these other alternatives. Some have good and bad parts to them. In terms of the gear solutions, right now we feel that they've probably been exhausted in terms of without further reducing the catch of scallops. However, there may be some hope in if turtle measures actually also reduce incidental catch of yellowtail flounder, there may be some help there. Increasing the yellowtail flounder tack is a possibility, but then it would come at the expense of the yellowtail flounder available for the groundfish vessels, and without changing the landing limit restrictions, might just simply increase bycatch and discards. The idea of using scallop sectors for the purpose of pooling their yellowtail flounder catch would require that the yellowtail flounder sector that would require the scallop plant to allocate yellowtail flounder to the sector depending on the vessels that join the sector. And it may also increase the monitoring costs for relatively small amounts of yellowtail per trip. It may not be something that's cost effective. The idea of making the voluntary measures, such as making shorter tows and leaving areas of yellowtail flounder catch, making those mandatory would be very difficult to enforce. And when vessels have only one access trip allocated to a closed groundfish area, there's no incentive for that vessel necessarily to take those steps to reduce its bycatch, because once it gets its trip in, if the area closes, it's not going to affect that vessel that year. So there's no incentive for vessels individually with one trip to take steps on their own to minimize their incidental catch of yellowtail. Allocating the access trips differently, there's a couple of ways that we looked at this. There may be some ways of working, but they have also some downsides, and such as product quality. If you spread it out and have vessels fishing at different times of year, the meat weights and meat qualities are different. But there may be some hope in those ideas, needs further development. Increasing observer coverage would improve the estimates of yellowtail flounder catch, most likely. But at the same time, if those observations result in higher estimates of yellowtail flounder catch, it would essentially backfire. You'd close sooner rather than later. Because right now there's some imprecision in the estimate, and you could be coming in lower than you thought. Under the no-action alternative, and if the yellowtail flounder tack that is projected right now based on the results of the stock assessment actually materializes, the yellowtail flounder tack overall is going to increase, and therefore the 10% component that's allocated to the access programs would increase proportionally. And that mail out for more fish, unless, of course, the catch rates also increase at the same rate, and therefore that you'd be confronted with the same problem without any resolution. And then in terms of how to implement this, the staff isn't making any recommendations at this time. And we would like to point out that any regulation that requires modification of the groundfish plan would not take effect until at least 2010 if it's put into Amendment 16, and that would have to have been decided on at this meeting in order for it to take effect. Secondly, the choices of which alternatives are more viable or more workable may depend on which ACLAM options are chosen out of Amendment 16 and approved by NIPS, because we don't know yet what those things are going to do, and those certainly will have an implication on the problems and the resolutions that we've talked about here. And then we also need some guidance from probably General Counsel of the Regional Office as to which alternatives would require amendments, which plans, and which ones are frameworkable. And so there's still some work to do in that area. That's it.
Thanks, Phil. General questions or comments for Phil? Jim Odlin?
Yeah, Phil, just to try to figure out the magnitude of the problem, how much yield was lost due to early shutdowns of the closed areas?
If you look at attachment 1, which is on page 8 of the paper, those are the results for 2008, 2007, 2006. And you can see the number of trips that were taken, and
Is that number in there?
I think part of the problem is that there were compensation trips for the vessels that didn't get to fish in the area, and I don't think we have the calculation in terms of how much they caught, but we know that it was less than they would have caught on their access trips. But you can see the number of trips that were not taken. 74 trips in 2008 in the lightship area, the bottom row. For general category, 65 limited access trips. In 2006, there were 138 in the lightship area that weren't taken, and 154 in closed area 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One follow-up question. Is the percentage allowance that's highlighted there under item number 2, is that a frameworkable percentage, or would modifying that require putting it in an amendment, such as Amendment 16?
Under item number 2?
The percentage allowance, that is the 10% allowance that's allocated of the yellowtail tack for the limited access area trips. Is that frameworkable, or is that would that have to be put in the amendment?
That could be modified by framework. It was adopted by framework.
Anyone else on the council? Take a few comments from the audience. Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fisheries Survival Fund. This is a great report, and I think it's a good first stab at attempting to address what's going to be the dominant issue here in the council process, which is bycatch under ACLs and AMs. The only major error I see in the thing so far is that there's no gear solutions. In fact, we have some very nice gear solutions. The question is to figure out how to apply them, where the industry that applies them doesn't lose the benefit of coming up with a, you know, a proactive answer to a question. So what I'm interested in is how do we move forward from here? I would think that we need a more industry involvement in developing these approaches and to sort of work them out, maybe in a workshop forum or a joint industry advisor slash PDT, or pull people like we did with the JAR process from the advisory panels from several plans. But there should be a process to take this document and continue further in its development as a case study on how to deal with this type of issue. What is the plan for moving forward with this?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Were you here for the priorities discussion this morning?
Part of it, yes.
Okay. We're establishing an interspecies committee, which is the chair of each committee. It's going to be on a committee that I'm going to chair. And this is exactly the type of issue that committee is going to wrestle with. This is a white paper, and this is a case study on, as you pointed out, something that's going to be prevalent throughout all of our plans. And so we're going to have to figure out how to establish a protocol to deal with these trade-offs, that these decisions that need to be made.
Right. I'm just trying to think of a process where you could get technical guidance from the industry as opposed to occasionally coming up to a microphone, but actually developing ideas and advancing the ideas and indicating the issues that are problematic, for example. I mean, we could develop, you know, a fishery survival fund, for example, could develop a document and a letter, if you will, that reaches out to try to move this process along. But I'm just, you would be saying that we would present that to your interspecies committee.
Thanks, Ron. Maggie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to first thank Phil and the staff for producing this paper and for bringing this discussion forward today. I would agree with Ron that I think a useful strategy for moving forward would be have some formal meeting of some groundfish and scallop people to put some more meat on the bones of the proposals that Associated Fisheries of Maine put forward. As I said, they were deliberately vague because they were not developed in consultation with a lot of other people from the scallop fishery. So we would look forward to working with them to do that. I also think it would be helpful today if we could have some discussion of which of these items are currently frameworkable under the groundfish plan and which are not. And if we could just simply, for the items that are not currently frameworkable, if we could add those to the frameworkable list in Amendment 16, then we would have the beginning of a way to deal with those in the future if the council decided to go down one of those paths. So I'm not, you know, I couldn't identify which of these proposals are frameworkable and which aren't, but I'm hoping that the staff might be able to provide some guidance on that. And if we come up with something that we say, oh no, that can't be done, you'd have to amend the groundfish plan to do that, then let's add it to the list of frameworkable items in the groundfish plan. Thank you.
Drew.
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. Once again, would like to thank the staff for putting together this white paper. I think it's a good first step. industry does need to be more involved going forward in possible solutions and working with this the new interspecies committee. I think one of the Fisheries Vital Fund's biggest concern is that we come up with a solution and then we're told it can't be implemented until 2, 3, 4 years down the road. And so I was wondering if the chairman could either have a discussion or lay out a possible plan to try and avoid that scenario, because I think the last thing we want is to have a solution and have it sitting out here, not implemented, and you know, have this problem continue forward. So I was curious as to what some ideas were on how do we can make sure either through frameworkable actions or something that we can make sure something like this can be implemented in time.
What in time for what?
In time for when ACLs hit the ground, you know, 2010, 2011.
Well, what I'm, you know, bundling your comment with Maggie's and other comments that have been made, I'm intending to take this document and work with staff to determine what is and is not frameworkable.
Okay.
I'm also planning, like I said, to forward this to the Interspecies Committee, which I'd like to have meet probably not in December because things are getting tight, but right in January, right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And I am sensitive to Ron's comment about expanding the scope of those in the discussion so that we can get the solutions that are appealing and also that can be implemented.
Mm-hmm.
So by January, hopefully the Interspecies Committee will sit down, and this will be one of the things we look at.
Okay. And just, you know, one sort of added twist to all this from the Fisheries Survival Fund perspective too. What the right solution will be to this problem depends largely on what the groundfish fishery ends up looking like. And so there's going to have to be some time to wait for that to solidify before we can really tell how to best marry up the two fisheries. And so that's a concern timing-wise. But it's hard to say now what the proper solution is when we don't really know what the issues are going to be. So I throw that out there as well.
That's fair enough. I mean, as you know, that we're slated to vote in June on groundfish. So I think if we start looking at this issue in January and whittling down those things which need to be put in the amendment to become frameworkable on those things, perhaps, you know, we have to look at it probably not today in this forum because we have other issues to talk about today on the agenda. But
sure.
I think the council's sensitive to the needs here.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Anyone else on the council? Mary Beth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think we really need to take any council action at this point. It seems like you've laid out a good process that's going to move the issue forward, and I just wanted to make a comment in support of that.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Okay, Phil, Tom, and anyone else that worked on this, thank you very much. Deirdre, thank you. We'll take a very quick break, and then we'll get into scallops.